Hare Krishna Lalitangi Mataji, Dhanavad Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for joining, Mataji. Welcome to Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have Her Grace Preeti Vilasi Mataji on the call to enlighten us on Srimad Bhagavatam 4.24.6. Hare Krishna Mataji, Dhanavad Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for joining and giving your valuable association and time this morning. You can take over the call, Mataji. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. And with pranams to everyone on the call, please accept my humble obeisances.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayet Shrinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayam Tastohi Abhadrani Vidunoti Suhrit Satam Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, and today is verse number 6.
Rajnyam Vrittim Karadana Danda Shulkadi Darunam Manmayamano Dhirga Satra Vyajena Visasarjaha.
Synonyms: Ragnyam, of the kings, Vrittim, source of livelihood, Kara, taxes, Adana, realization, Danda, punishment, Shulka, fines, Adi, etc., Darunam, which are very severe, Manyamanaha, thinking like that, Dirga, long, Satra, sacrifice, Vyajena, on the plea, Visasarja, gave up, Ha, in the past. Translation: Whenever Antardhana, the supreme royal power, had to exact taxes, punish his citizens, or fine them severely, he was not willing to do so. Consequently, he retired from the execution of such duties and engaged himself in the performance of different sacrifices. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is clear herein that the king sometimes has to perform duties which are not very desirable just because he is the king. Similarly, Arjuna was not at all willing to fight because fighting or killing one's own kinsmen and family members is not at all desirable. Nonetheless, the Kshatriyas had to perform such undesirable actions as a matter of duty. Maharaj Antardhana was not happy while exacting taxes or punishing the citizens for their criminal activities. Therefore, on the plea of performing sacrifices, he retired from the royal majestic power at an early age, very early age.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam
सहगण रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचना गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमाओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्री वसादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणम् सो ट्रान्स्लेशन् आफ् दिस् वर्स् 4:24-6 इस् Whenever Antardhana, the supreme royal power, had to exact taxes, punish his citizens or fine them severely, he was not willing to do so. Consequently, he retired from the execution of such duties and engaged himself in the performance of different sacrifices. So, this chapter that we are discussing, it begins with talking about the descendants of Prithu Maharaj. So verses 1 to 15, they discuss about the genealogical line of Prithu Maharaj. After describing the life and character of Prithu Maharaj in the previous chapters, Maitreya Rishi, he began to describe the genealogical line of the entire Prithu dynasty until we reach the Prachetas. So Vijitashva, who's discussed in this particular verse, he was the eldest son of Prithu Maharaj. And it is described in some of the previous verses that he had a reputation just like his father Prithu. He was a wonderful person of very good character and he was a good king. So he became the emperor after Prithu Maharaj, and being very affectionate to the rest of his brothers, he gave them different directions to rule. So the king, he was the emperor, but under him all the other brothers were ruling in different directions. So here in this verse, Vijitashva is referred by the name Antardhana. And in the purport of the verse 4:24-3, Srila Prabhupada explains that when Indra stole Prithu Maharaj's horse from the sacrificial arena, Indra was actually not visible to everyone while he was stealing the horse. But Maharaj Prithu's son, Vijitashva, could actually find him. And in one of the previous chapters, there are many verses dedicated to how Vijitashva was actually chasing Maharaj Prithu, chasing Indra to find the horse. So despite his knowing that Indra was taking away his father's horse, Vijitashva did not attack him or kill him. He was only chasing him and bringing back the horse. So this indicates that Maharaj Vijitashva respected the right persons. Although Indra was dressed in the robes of a sannyasi, he was behaving like a fake sannyasi and stealing the horse from his father, Vijitashva knew perfectly well that Indra was no ordinary thief. And since Indra was a great powerful demigod and a servant of the Supreme Lord, Vijitashva purposefully excused him out of sentiment.
even though Indra was acting wrongly. So Indra became very pleased with Vijitashva because Vijitashva wouldn't shoot arrows at Indra. So Indra became very pleased with him, and we all know demigods have several mystic powers and they are able to appear and disappear at their will. So Indra, he bestowed this mystic power of disappearance and appearance on Vijitashva. So therefore, from that day onwards, he came to be known as Antardhana, meaning he also obtained this mystic power of disappearance at his will. So this was Antardhana whom we are talking about. Now this Vijitashva or Antardhana, he was the emperor after the time of Prithu Maharaj. And in this verse specifically, we see that he considered his kingly duties, like what? Like taxing and punishing people and giving them fines, very painful. He didn't like doing these things. He was very uncomfortable with these things. And he gave them up on the plea of performing sacrifices. Now, what does that mean? So, Srila Jiva Goswami, he gives a commentary in his Kramasandarbha on this verse. He says, if Vijitashva gave up all the duties and went away, for example, supposing Vijitashva, he just gave up his kingdom and ran away, or he went away to the forest or something like that, then it would mean that he was breaking the conduct of a king, because a king cannot abruptly leave things like that. So, however, this should be understood that he gave up the specific duties as mentioned, which is taxing and imposing fines, giving severe punishments. He didn't involve in these kind of duties of a king, but rather he just gave them up and he went away and started, went away in the sense he avoided these duties and he began to perform sacrifices. So instead of directly involving and taxing and punishing people, that gave the people suffering and him also suffering, he felt very painful to do these things. He gave up these duties in the plea of performing sacrifices. This is the statement used by Srila Jiva Goswami. So our discussion today will be, what is it that Vijitashva did? Did he do the right thing? Are there any examples of similar kings in the past? Was he an ideal king or was he just a good pious king? So that will be our discussion today. It will be about kings, and we can kind of analyze what exactly Vijitashva was trying to do. Was it the right thing to do? Was it the most ideal thing to do? That we shall discuss today. So we have already seen his character in brief while seeing how he dealt with Indradev. He excused Indra. He didn't want to punish him by killing him in spite of Atri Rishi giving him specific instructions to kill Indra. So at one point, even Prithu Maharaj was so frustrated. His father himself was so frustrated that he was ready to punish Indra. But at that time, Brahma intervened and forbade him to do so. However, Vijitashva would chase Indra and bring back the horse, but he would never punish Indra. He did everything. It was not that he was not a powerful person or a chivalrous person. He would chase Indra each and every time to bring back the horse. But however, since Indra was a great demigod and also he was in the garb of a sannyasi, Vijitashva was very kind and he never punished Indra at any time. So this was the character of Vijitashva. And further, in this verse, we see about the situation he had to deal with when he was a king. So when Vijitashva had a problem, he had a problem. It hurt him. He didn't want to collect taxes, which was actually the source of the livelihood of the king. King is dependent on the taxes collected from people. And he was very uncomfortable imposing fines, and he never wanted to give harsh punishments. So this was his nature. We have already seen his nature, how he was. He didn't want to unnecessarily punish Indra. He wanted to excuse him. Similarly, when he was a king, he was very uncomfortable doing these harsh things, okay, which a king should execute. Now, collecting taxes by the king means he has to deal with a lot of problems. It is not that everybody is ready to pay taxes all the time. The Vaishyas in those days who were engaged in business, they were bound to pay taxes. We read even the story of Krishna, how Radha Krishna, they had this pastimes of paying taxes because they were cowherd people. So those people who were engaged in business, they were bound to pay taxes. But the problem is that most people who are going to pay taxes are not really happy parting away from their money. even today we see that when we go and file taxes, we file for exemptions. So nobody is really comfortable giving away all the money to the government. It's hard to change the mindset of the public or the people in general and make them let go of their attachment and say that the king should be given all these taxes. However, at the same time, without taxes, the ministers and soldiers, they cannot be paid. How can you pay ministers or soldiers or people in the cabinet if you're not paying the taxes? How can you provide facilities to the people without paying taxes? So excessive tax is not fair, but taxes must be collected by every king. So that is one issue that a king faces day in and day out. How is he going to exact the taxes? How is he going to run his government? Now, the second problem which Itashwa was facing is giving punishment. Now, the wrongdoers must be punished, but the punishment given by the government should actually lead in the correction of the consciousness of the person. Even if the punishment may be given, even if fines are imposed, it is not true that every time the person becomes reformed and corrected. Classic example is in India, all the drivers, they tend to cross lights or they don't follow rules. Now, if you're caught and you're asked to pay the fine, we will pay the fine. But it doesn't mean that because I've paid the fine today, tomorrow I'm not going to break the rule. Most of us break the rule because that is there implanted in our heads that we can break the rule. Okay. So, the idea of asking for fines or correcting a person, giving harsh punishments, is that he should become reformed and corrected. But, you know, it's not always that everybody is reformed and corrected. A thief continues to steal even after he's been caught many times. So Vijitashva had issues with these two problems. That is, you know, he was constantly dealing with giving punishments and exacting taxes. But however, an ideal king is supposed to take the right stand and punish the miscreant. There is no escape. Manu Samhita says that if a man kills, then he should also be killed. No excuse. From Manu Samhita, the hanging of a killer or a murderer is actually enjoined. That is there. If the king doesn't hang the murderer, then he is bound by karma. So, in fact, when a king orders a murderer to be hanged, it is to be considered as the king's mercy. This is there in Manu Samhita. He cannot be excused. Life for life. That is the law. That is the duty of a king. The king has to give harsh punishments if the correction should be done and if there should be law and order. So for a king dealing with these two issues, as mentioned, consumes a huge chunk of their time, energy and consciousness. Now here is where Vijitashva had a problem. He was not inclined in doing these things because he would be pained by these, the verse says. And I was listening to a lecture by Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, and in his lecture he was explaining that Vijitashva would rather get the ministers or the advisor brahmanas to deal with these specific cases of punishment that had to be given. He would call the members in his treasury to deal with the taxes of the government than get directly involved. So as long as it is being taken care of, Vijitashva felt fine. You know, he didn't have to directly get involved in it and break his head. So Vijitashva, in the pretext of performing sacrifices, because a king also performs sacrifices, and once you sit for a sacrifice, you cannot get up and go to attend these issues. You have to be in the sacrifice. So therefore, in the pretext of performing sacrifices, he handed over these dealings to his ministers, people in the cabinet, people in the treasury, and he continued to rule. Now, one may ask, okay, why can't he just give up everything and go? No, he cannot. Because the country needs a king. The country needs a king, and he was still young. So this is what happened with Vijitashva. Now, the tendency of a Kshatriya. The tendency of a Kshatriya by nature is that they have a tendency to take charge of the situation or be the one in control. Though they take suggestions from the ministers, they will ask suggestions from the ministers, they will talk to the ministers, and they will take suggestions, they will do all that. But ultimately, the nature of a Kshatriya is to be in control, you know, to actually take the decision and give the punishment. But however, though this is the natural tendency of a Kshatriya, which is to rule and manage, still Vijitashva was very uncomfortable doing that. So Prabhupada, he explains in the purport. When Arjuna didn't want to fight in the battlefield, Krishna called him impotent and told him that you have to fight. It is a matter of duty. You are a Kshatriya and your dharma is to fight. You cannot, there is no escape. You are a warrior, you have come to the battlefield, you better fight. So one must follow whatever his varna and ashram is. And one must follow what his dharma is. So Arjuna, being a warrior, being a Kshatriya, he had to fight because that was his natural inclination. It was his varnashram dharma. So he had to fight. One must follow varnashram and do his dharma. This is what Krishna was insisting that Arjuna should do. But however, what did Arjuna do? We see in the beginning of the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he gives so many reasons. Even before Krishna speaks, actually, he just gives all his reasons. He says he's feeling compassionate. Then he says his dear ones and relatives will be killed. It will lead to infamy and irreligious acts. He says he's afraid of sinful reactions. If he kills everyone, his dear ones won't be there to enjoy with him. He will be destroying family traditions. Like this, he gives so many reasons why he wouldn't want to fight. And anyone who's hearing this will find it logical. Yes, correct. Whatever Arjuna is saying is correct. So he should not fight. But then Krishna was telling him, no, that's not your natural inclination. When at one point even Arjuna said, you know what, I will give up this and I will go and become a renunciant. I will just go and live a livelihood by begging. I'll go to the forest. But then Krishna said, no, you can't do that because you're going to be a very bad renunciant. You're going to be a very bad beggar. Your natural quality is that of a Kshatriya. You're born to rule and manage. You will not do a good job being a renunciant or a beggar in the forest because you will continue to maintain your Kshatriya attitude. So Krishna said, you better perform your dharma and fight in consciousness of me. Now here is the catch. Krishna says, he didn't just say, go do your dharma, go fight. No. He added something there. He said, whatever it is, you do it in consciousness of me. Think of me and fight. Now, let's come back to the case of Vijitashva. So this son of Prithu Maharaj, Vijitashva, was not willing to do the activities of a Kshatriya, which is punishing the people. He was very liberal by nature. He didn't even want to kill Indra who stole the horse. Though he was very chivalrous, though he was chasing Indra relentlessly and bringing back the horse, aiming arrows, still not releasing them, though he was praised by the sages, if you go three chapters before this, you will see the activities of Vijitashva, what he was doing. So Vijitashva, he would go chase, he was very, very chivalrous. He would bring back the horse, he will do everything. He showed all acts of bravery. And in fact, at that time, he earned the title Vijitashva. Vijitashva means one who conquered the horse from Indra. So he even earned this title of Vijitashva from the sages. Yet, he refused to kill Indra. So here is a unique situation of a king. When he was the king, he did not like punishing and fining people. And at the same time, he couldn't break the conduct of a king. So instead, he took a very intelligent decision. He began to perform grand sacrifices in the consciousness of Krishna for pleasing the Lord so that he could fulfill the duties of a saintly king and he could work for the well-being of the entire kingdom, Loka Kalyanam. So by performing large sacrifices, he could focus on his own well-being and ultimately attain perfection of life and also work for the well-being of the entire country. So when a king functions in Krishna-conscious fashion, it is actually a win-win situation for everyone. The person who is doing the sacrifice, keeping the Lord in the center, is benefited. The people performing the sacrifices benefited, and so are everybody in the kingdom benefited. So everyone is benefited when Krishna conscious activities are being performed. We all know this verse from Bhagavatam 1-8. Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto artha yopakalpate nartasya dharmai kantasya kamo latya hi smritaha. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Bhagavatam 1-8. So, in history, consistently, we see this as a fact. Many great sages like King Janaka, Ambarish Maharaj, Lord Ramachandra, and even Vijitashva's own father, Prithu Maharaj, were known for the devotional service and the grand sacrifices they performed. for the well-being of the entire kingdom. Now, quickly, we'll look at the ninth canto, the story of Ambarish Maharaj. In the story of Ambarish Maharaj, we see the importance of sacrifices that a king should perform and how these sacrifices actually benefit the entire kingdom. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Maharaj Ambarish, he was the most fortunate personality. He had achieved rule over the entire world, which consists of seven islands. He had achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. And such position, such great position was achieved by Ambarish Maharaj, and still he did not care for it at all, because he knew very well that all these opulences is actually material. And just like all this opulence he considered to be just like a dream, and he knew ultimately everything would be destroyed. So Ambarish Maharaj was a great devotee of the Supreme Lord, and because of his devotion, he thought of this entire universe to be more insignificant than a piece of stone, not insignificant as a piece of stone. So Maharaj Ambarish was always engaging his mind and meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. His words or his tongue in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, his ears hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. He engaged in his eyes in seeing the beautiful deity form of Krishna and seeing Krishna's temples and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell and smelling the fragrance from the tulasi that was offered to the Lord. He engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad, his legs in walking to the holy places and temples, his head in bowing down before the Lord. And all his desires, every single desire he had, he used it in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. So Ambarish Maharaj, he never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all the senses in this devotional service of the Lord, and he perfected all the nine processes of devotional service. This is something we all know. So in performing his prescribed duties as a king, Ambarish Maharaj, whatever he did, he offered the results of his royal activities to the Supreme Lord. And he took advice from the Brahmanas. He took advice from the Brahmanas who were Krishna conscious and who were faithful to the Lord. Like this, taking advice from them and performing devotional service, we see that Ambarish Maharaj, he ruled the earth without any difficulty. And in the purport, Prabhupada says a few things which is very important. So we see in the purport of 9.21, Prabhupada says that people are very anxious to live in peace and have prosperity in the material world. But the real peace formula is given personally by the Supreme Lord. And everyone should understand that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he is the ultimate proprietor of all planets, and therefore he is the enjoyer of all activities, which may be political, social, cultural, religious, economic or whatever. And he says, when the king and his advisors are perfect devotees, nothing can go wrong in a state. And all the citizens would automatically become devotees of the Lord, and good character will follow once you become a devotee. So citizens under the guidance of a Krishna conscious king are sure to become devotees, and there will be no need to enact any more new laws every day to reform the way in state. So if the citizens are trained to become devotees by a devoted king, advised by a cabinet of devotee ministers, then the state will not be in the material world, but it will be in the spiritual world. So this is something very powerful. It was a very powerful purport, because it tells us why these saintly kings have to be in post, why they should be in position, and the importance of whatever they are performing, the sacrifices they are performing in consciousness of Krishna, the devotional service that they perform in consciousness of Krishna is very, very important, because it changes the mindset of everybody. And Bhagavatam even continues to say that even in desert countries, like where river Saraswati is flowing, Ambarish Maharaj, he performed great sacrifices like Ashwamedha Yajna, and he satisfied Yajneshwar, who is Lord Krishna, and because of which there was no scarcity of rain. And because there was no scarcity of rain, even in these countries, food grains was produced. There were no famines. And it is the duty of a king, therefore, to perform different types of yajnas, like the Ashwamedha yajna, to maintain the production of various kinds of food grain. We all know, Annad Bhavati Bhutani. Without food grains, both men and animals will starve. So, Ambarish Maharaj, as the head of the country, he performed yajnas using with the assistance of great personalities like Vasishta, Gautama, Sita, and other rishis. He also engaged in devotional service at the same time. Savai Savai Manaha Krishna Padaravayandeyo. So he always engaged his mind in worship of Krishna. So the king or the head of the state must see to it that these things go on well under the proper guidance, and he must also be an ideal devotee as exemplified by Ambarish Maharaj. It is the duty of the king to see that food grains are produced and everyone is happy. Even in desert-like countries, there's enough rain and food crops are growing well. So this was Ambarish Maharaj, a character from the 9th canto, and he was a very successful king. His focus was, yes, performing devotional service and also performing yajnas. So the point here is that yajnas is useful. Yes, if Vijitashva went and performed sacrifices, was it meaningless? No. It was useful because the entire kingdom was benefited from it. So, we understand the importance of sacrifices that has to be performed by a king. But however, when we take the example of other great kings like Yudhishthir Maharaj or Lord Ramachandra, who is the ideal kings this universe has ever seen, we see that they dealt with giving punishment and dealing with the problems of the citizens in a more direct way by executing the power as a king. They were the king, they were present when the problems were there. They were naturally inclined to deal with such matters and they performed their duties as a king in an ideal and a very just manner. And they never retired from such duties and even if they had to, they did it at a much later stage. They also performed elaborate sacrifices. Of course, Yudhishthir or even Ramachandra, we all know that they were performing great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha or the Rajasuya. At the same time, they were very hands-on when they had to give when they had to give justice or when they had to be there as a king for their citizens. In the Uttarakhanda of the Ramayana, we see actually how Lord Ramachandra would deal with the people in his kingdom. So almost till the end of the Yudhakhanda, we don't see Lord Ram sitting as a king and dealing with his citizens because there was too much going on. He was banished to the forest and all this happened. He had to kill Ravana. He had to do other things. He had to go and bless the sages in the forest. He had other duties to perform. But the remaining part of his years, we see he ruled as a king. He ruled as a king for almost 11,000 years or something, it's mentioned. So definitely, he spent a lot of time dealing with the citizens. Now, there are a few stories in the Uttarakhanda that talk about how Ram would deal with the problems of the citizens, how he would give judgment, what did he do. So we'll just see one of the stories, which I thought was very interesting and loaded with lessons for everyone to learn. So we'll just go through one story and see how Ram dealt with it and how Ram understood the exact situation. Once Ram told Lakshman, you go to the palace gate and bring everyone there who have come here to me with their petitions. Because in Ramarajya, if anyone had any issue, they would directly go to the king. They would go to the palace and wait, and when the king called them, they would go in front and Ram would solve their issues. So he ordered Lakshman to go to the gate and see if anyone had come with any petitions. Generally, in the kingdom of Ayodhya, when Ram was ruling, everything was perfect. There was no need for anything, actually. Everyone was happy and satisfied. And Lakshman also said the same. He said, my dear brother, it's your rule. So obviously, everyone is happy. I don't think there is anyone at the door. But then Ram insisted, no. You go again and look very carefully. And I don't want anyone to accuse me of even the slightest tinge of negligence. I should take care of everything. Any problem in the kingdom, I will take care. And I don't want any bit of irreligiosity to go undetected in my kingdom. He was very particular about that. So Ram was very much the king who was on top of things. So again, Lakshman, he was sent again to the doors, and he went near the palace entrance, and he saw a little dog sitting there in the palace gate. And the dog's head was bleeding. And the dog was staring at Lakshman with a fixed gaze, and he was whining. He was crying. So Lakshman asked, "What's the matter? Why have you come here? And you can tell me everything without fear." So this dog would talk. Okay, so assume, I mean, just understand that the dog was able to talk. So the dog said, "I wish to speak directly to Lord Ram. I want to go and speak directly to the king. Lord Ramachandra's lotus feet, they avoid fearlessness, and he in fact is the shelter of all the distress." So Lakshman said, "If you have something to say, then you are welcome. You please come inside and you speak to the king directly yourself." But then the dog said, "I'm a very low-born creature and I'm so unworthy of entering temples. I don't enter houses of the Brahmanas. I don't enter royal palaces. And this king, Lord Ram, he is the embodiment of all religious principles. Without his permission, how can I come before him? Who am I to come in front of him?" So he said, "You go and ask your king if I can come in front of him." And then Lakshman, he went to his dear brother and he reported the issue. And Ramachandra told his brother, "It's my command. Immediately, whoever it may be, doesn't matter who he is, bring him in front of me without delay." So then the dog was brought inside, and the dog very humbly before Ram, he said, "Oh Ram, you are the model king. You are the most religious king and you are the ideal king. So with my head bent at your lotus feet, I'm asking you for your mercy. I'm going to say something to you, but please don't become angry with what I have to say." So then Ram smiled and he said, "Okay, go ahead, just say anything you want. Don't be fearful. Yes, I am the king, but I am there for the citizens. It doesn't matter whether you're a dog or a Brahmin or whatever. You have come here with a problem. It's my duty to take care of you." So Ramachandra, he encouraged this dog to speak up. And the dog said, "Actually, a mendicant Brahmana by the name Sarvartha Siddha injured my head. There was no fault on my part, but still he broke my head. That's the reason I'm bleeding, and he should be brought to justice." Immediately, when Ram heard this, he had his men summon this Brahmin by the name Sarvartha Siddha. So when the Brahmin came in front of Lord Ram, Lord Ramachandra asked him, "Why did you strike the dog, and what was the dog's fault? What made you so angry? Angry is a very deadly enemy of a person. It is like a sharp sword that will slash away all the virtues that one has earned. Anger nullifies one's long accumulated merit of austerity. You may be doing so much austerity, but a fit of anger can absolve everything. A saintly person you may be, you may have 100 qualities, but just one moment of anger can simply spoil everything. Everything is lost. No one will remember the good qualities of yours. They will only remember that minute of anger." This happens to all of us. At least I can watch for myself. So everything is lost in a second if you're angry. And Lord Ramachandra said, "A Brahmin's true character cannot remain hidden for too long, no matter how hard he tries to conceal it. For those who have not conquered the forces of lust, anger and greed, their real character is revealed under stressful conditions." So a real test is how we behave under stressful conditions. In a fit of anger, we will spoil everything. All the good name we have earned, or all the good character that we have, or all the austerities that we have done, everything is spoiled in a second. And when is our real true character seen? When we are under stress. That is the real test. So, of course, we are all in this material world continuously tormented by these problems. But this is very instructive. It takes a lot of practice to develop these qualities. So when Ramachandra told this to the Brahmana told, "I was wandering about. I was begging for alms, and I was so famished. I didn't get food for many days. And when I was walking on the road one day, I came upon this dog. This dog was squatting in the middle of the road, blocking my path. I was so irritated. I told him to make way, but he got up so slowly, and that really got me angry. I was so irritated. I just took a stone and I threw it at him, and I struck him on his head with my stone. This is what I did. I was very, very famished at that time. I was starving, and my anger became easily aroused. So generally, when you're very hungry, you become angry. That is what happened to me. But however, I admit my guilt. I was guilty. I shouldn't have done this to this dog. And you are the king, so you can punish me as you see fit, so that you can save me from falling down into a hellish condition of life. So Ram, when he heard this, he looked at his ministers. And the ministers of Lord Ram were no ordinary people. They were great sages like Bhrigu, Angiras, Vasishtha, Kashyapa, all of them were sitting. And Lord Ram turned to them and asked, what should be the punishment now? What justice must be done? Actually, nothing instills more confidence in the minds of the people than a good administration and fair punishment for the wrongdoers. So these things are very important. Unless we instill these, how are the people going to be happy in the country? How are they going to be confident of my kingdom? At the same time, Ram also had a question to the ministers. Ram himself was confused, because the person who was charged was a Brahmana. He was a very respectable person. And a Brahmana generally should not be punished. That is also the codes of law. But however, punishment has to be given. Otherwise, people will not have any fear and great mistakes will be made. In countries where the punishment is very heavy, that's where mistakes are lesser. Because we all know, even in Kali Yuga, this applies. So we know many countries where very strict punishments are given and the law is not broken so easily. But in places where the law is taken for granted, more and more crimes continue. So when Ram was in this dilemma, Bhrigu, Angiras, Vasishtha, Kashyapa and others who knew religious principles, they said, whatever it may be, a Brahmana cannot be punished. And this was the unanimous opinion of all those who were conversant with Rajadharma sitting there in the assembly. But then they said one thing, whatever it may be, we all feel that a Brahmana should not be punished at any cost. But still, Ram, you are the ultimate judge because you are the Lord of the entire universe. Now, these sages knew the identity of Ram. So they said, you are the Lord of this entire universe and you are Vishnu himself. So whatever is spoken by the Supreme Lord is actually the ultimate religion. The principles of dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam stu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So you are the Lord. Whatever you speak is dharma. So speak. You decide. So at this point, while Ram was thinking what he must say, he looked at the dog and he inspired the dog to speak. So then the dog opened his mouth and he said, O King, you asked me when I came inside, what can I do for you? So if you really wish to act in a way that will please me, kindly appoint this Brahmana as a post of the Kulapati or the head Acharya of a particular monastery. Called as Kalanjara Matha. So there was a monastery in that area by the name Kalanjara Matha. So the dog asked Ram to name this person as the Kulapati, meaning the head Acharya of this particular mat. Now this sounded like a good deal. Ram didn't have to insult the Brahmana. The judgment was given. The dog was very happy and so was the Brahmin. Ram fulfilled the dog's request and also delighted the Brahmin at the same time. So Sarvartha Siddha, who was the Brahmin, he became honored as the spiritual leader and he was placed on top of a magnificently decorated elephant and he was appointed as the head of that entire ashram. So he was the leader there. And the Brahmana was actually very excited. He thought this was an excellent punishment. He was very happy. The dog was also very happy. The dog was laughing. He was very, very happy. However, the ministers, they were confused. They protested. And they said, what is this? What kind of punishment is this? This is not a punishment. this looks like a joke. It's not a punishment. Instead of putting the Brahmana to, you know, shame, or, you know, you can't directly punish the Brahmana or hang him or do something like that. That is understood. But at least the Brahmana should be corrected. He should be put to shame. But you didn't even do that. You have glorified him and awarded him an exalted position. So the sages, in fact, were confused. The ministers were confused. The intelligent people were confused. They didn't understand what happened. But Ram replied, "You don't understand the intricate nature of karma, but this dog understands that very well." Ram perfectly understood the reason of the dog's request, and willingly Ram said okay to it. So being prompted by Ram, the dog was asked to explain. Ramchandra said, "You explain to these people why this decision was given." Then the dog said his story. He said, "In my past life, I was the head of this Kalanjara Matha, this ashram. I was the leader. I was the Kulapati there. And I duly worshipped all the demigods and brahmanas, and I performed my sacred duties very, very nicely and carefully. And I maintained all the servants and maidservants very well. And yet, in spite of so much care and attention, I ended up taking my next birth as a dog because of some unknown fault, which I'm still trying to figure out why. Now just consider this Brahmin who cannot even control his anger. He's certainly unfit to be any Acharya. For his audacity for accepting such a high position, he will degrade 7 generations of his family. How can a man who's not even able to control his temper be put in charge of Brahmanas, cows and deity worship? So this is the punishment that he deserves." So the dog was saying, "Brahmin, you experience what I underwent and you will understand my difficulty." So after saying this, the dog suddenly disappeared, and Ram and everyone else were just awestruck with wide open eyes. Although previously born in a very high family, holding a high post, somehow he was forced to take the body of a dog. So which means leadership is responsibility, and responsibility is sacrifice, and sacrifice is suffering. This is the chain that the dog went through. He was a leader. He had responsibility. Responsibility means sacrifice. Sacrifice means suffering. Actually, any leadership post, even in the spiritual circles, is extreme responsibility. Even small mistakes are taken very seriously. Of course, we all know this incident happened only in Treta Yuga, but it was very severe at that time and at that point in time. But even in the age of Kali, one has to be very careful. So after leaving the court of Ayodhya, this dog went up, and he was starving because he purposefully abstained from any food and water, and he gave up his body, and he was hoping for a better life in his next birth. That was the story of the dog. Now that's why devotees generally, they say, you aspire to be a servant, don't aspire to be a leader. Mood of servitorship is actually more important than being a leader who can control. Power is very blinding, but with power comes great responsibility. So this is something everyone can, at least I can learn. Everyone can learn about being careful when you have a certain sort of authority. So Ram dealt. Now that's not the focus of our talk. The focus of our talk is about the king's duties, what he does. So Ram dealt with issues in his kingdom upfront. He was very well-read, Rajaniti, Rajaniti Shastras, everything. Very well-read, very good king. He performed all the duties of a king very perfectly. There is also the story of Shambhuka. Many people, they talk about it, about why Ram did this, why Ram did that. So the story of Shambhuka actually is that when an unqualified person was doing some sort of austerities without proper samskaras to ascend heaven in a shortcut and take over heaven. So to stop this, Lord Ram had to correct the situation. People were dying untimely in the kingdom. A small child died. So when this came to the notice of Lord Ram didn't say, okay, I'm going to ignore the situation. No. He went and he literally chopped off the head of Shambhuka to reinstate order in the country. Because Shambhuka was performing austerities, transgressing the natural laws. And he was creating a lot of disorder and havoc. So Ram was well informed. And he dealt with all sorts of issues up front. He took the right decisions after consulting with his ministers, and he executed all his duties perfectly as a king. And later in his life, he also performed beautiful sacrifices, elaborate sacrifices for the well-being of his country. And surely, this king of Ram's caliber, I mean, a person like Ram was an ideal king. So there were many ideal kings whose activities are described in great detail in the pages of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, in fact, dedicates chapters and chapters to great kings. So to summarize and understand the situation in this verse, we can see that Vijitashva, though doesn't seem to be in the caliber of a great ideal king like his own father Prithu Maharaj or Lord Ramachandra, yet he was a king of gentle behavior. Vijitashva willingly gave up these kingly duties early in life because it was painful for him. He didn't want to get involved directly in political matters firsthand. Was it right or wrong? As a king, you have to do it. But he was uncomfortable doing it. He preferred to spend his life focusing on sacrifices that would please the Lord. But ultimately, that is what is actually most important for oneself, for the entire kingdom, and for the people in general. So the point is that there are many people with different natures. Not every king is the same. Even in our circles, we have people of different natures and qualities. Different people act in different ways in different situations. And everyone is dear to the Lord. So there are different types of kings with different capabilities. Everyone is not expected to behave the same. All of them are discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. All these kings are discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Some great kings are discussed for several chapters because they did great things. Some are described in a few verses. However, when devotional service is there, irrespective of the way they deal with religious duties or material situations, whether they do it directly or whether they do it indirectly using a cabinet of ministers, everything will be fine in the kingdom as Krishna is the ultimate mover of all situations. As long as the king and the people are Krishna conscious, everything will be just as fine. Because ultimately we are not in control. It is Krishna who is the ultimate mover of each and every situation of this universe. Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo Yatho Bhaktir Adokshache. Bhagavatam 1-6. So when Krishna is in the center, everything will be auspicious, just like how we saw the kingdom of Ambarish was perfectly blessed in all respects. And in the next verse, we will see more in detail about the devotional activities of King Vijitashva and how he perfected his life. And in fact, Prabhupada writes in the purport that he attained the liberation of Salokya. So we will stop here. And any questions, comments, realizations, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Spiritulasi Mataji, Ranvat Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Mataji. Nice examples and nice stories. I request all the devotees at this point, if they have any questions or comments for Mataji, they can go ahead. Thank you, Mataji, once again.
Thank you, Lavanya Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Spiritulasi Mataji, very, very nice class. Nice analogy and nice examples. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Komadaki Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Priti Vilasini, Gopi, Koti, Koti, Tambor, Pranam, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Vidyavati. As usual, very wonderful class, Mataji, very, very inspiring story. Mataji, can you sing one Vaishnavajana for all of us?
Sure, Mataji, right after the question answer session.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, Dandavat Pranam. Thank you, Mataji, for the nice class. Mother, my question here, it looks like on the surface that Vijitsava was trying to escape from duties, right, Mataji? He's not retiring because of old age. He's retiring because of some responsibility that he's not willing to perform.
Right.
So, how do we understand that, Mataji, here?
Yes, so the responsibilities he was not willing to perform is direct dealing where he had to punish people or he had to impose fines or, you know, collect taxes. So he avoided that in the pretext of performing sacrifices. Now, if a king is performing sacrifices, he is not obliged to get up in the middle of sacrifice and go and deal with these issues. The point here is that he was a very gentle king by nature. We discussed his nature, how he was not willing to even hurt Indra when Indra was doing so much, and Atri Rishi was giving him direct instructions to shoot arrows at Indra. He wouldn't do that. It was his nature to, you know, be gentle and kind and liberal with others. So therefore, when he's performing sacrifices, he's achieving Loka Kalyanam, in the sense everyone is happy, he's also happy, the kingdom is also Krishna conscious. So that is the way he avoided going like Lord Ramachandra and dealing with situations firsthand. So in that sense, yes, he retired from those duties at an early age and he spent all his time performing sacrifices. So that was his nature. So not every king is the same. Each one has their inherent nature, which comes to play during difficult situations. Whether it was right or wrong, we cannot say, because ultimately everyone is dear to the Lord and he did attain perfection.
Yeah. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you very
much. Hare Krishna, Mataji. Can I follow up on that, please?
Yes, please.
Yes, I don't understand why his, I would say, shirking his duty was not, would not be characterized as sense gratification.
No.
He was... Huh?
No, it is not sense gratification. No.
Because the reason why I said it is because it was his duty to address those situations, but he avoided it by performing sacrifices.
Right.
So that's why I'm saying this sounds like sense gratification. So I don't understand why it's not.
Okay, it's not sense gratification because these sacrifices were performed for the well-being of the kingdom, keeping Krishna in the center. So it was not any sort of sense gratification. It was, as I explained, it was a huge chunk of using, draining out his consciousness, trying to deal with these issues. He had a cabinet of ministers or people who would help him do it. So he didn't want to get directly involved. It pained him. That is what both Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur write. And that was his nature. It pained him to see people suffer. If he gave a punishment and he saw people suffer, it pained him. He was not a very Kshatriya person who would go firsthand and punish people.
So it's not that the people who deserved punishment escaped punishment. It was just that he didn't dole it out directly. He let people do it.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so therefore it's not sense gratification because, you know, his duty was fulfilled just not by him directly.
Indirectly, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Yes, Mataji.
We also, instead of punishing, then he started sacrifice. So then that's for to satisfy Krishna.
Yes.
So when Krishna is satisfied, and naturally all living entities become satisfied. So that person who has committed some whatever mischief or whatever, that heart, then his heart also becomes purified because Krishna is satisfied.
Yes, that's exactly like how Ambarish did things. So Ambarish, we were saying in the purport, that's exactly what happened. The entire kingdom became purified because Krishna is in ultimate control of everything. And when Krishna is satisfied, everybody is satisfied. When the king is pious, the subjects become pious.
Thank you, Mataji. Very nice. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Kamadaki Mataji, for adding in.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, Dharma Pram, Mataji, all glories to Guru Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj. Very, very beautiful class, very, very clearly explained. all the examples in the past time. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Palika Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Dandavat Pranam, all goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Very, very beautiful class, Mataji. It was really nice, amazing as always.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity, Mataji. Very grateful to you. Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you so very much for the beautiful class and also for helping us really understand that there are many ways to be a good leader or to do our duty in the proper way without following everyone doing everything the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to understand that there are many, many ways for us to perform our duties well. By showing us all of the different kings and the way that they did things. So I very much appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tiffany Mataji. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Mataji or song, Mataji? I'm very bad at songs, but if you suggest, I can try. Brinda Gopika Mataji?
Mataji, can I suggest?
Yes, please, Mataji.
Daya Nichai Chaitanya Bole Nachare Amara Man.
Nachare Amara Man, thank you.
It's very nice song.
Yeah.
Dayal Nitai Chaitanya Bole Nachare Amara Man.
Dayal Nitai Chaitanya Bole Nachare Amara Man. 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 Dayal Nitai Chaitanya Bole Nachare Amara Man. Then... Mataji, you want to do the second part? I don't know the second part. Kamadiki Mataji?
I was talking, mute. Mm-hmm. In a book, I can...
Okay.
Yeah.
Emol Doyal... Doyal to nahi hai, marke prem re.
Yes. Very nice. You got it.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Yes, Mataji.
Can I continue?
Yes.
Doyal to nahi, doyal to nahi. मारखे ये प्रेम ते अदोया तो नहे अपराध दूर जावे अपराध दूर जावे आवे प्रेम दान अपराध दूर जावे अपावे प्रेम दान कृष्ण नाम रुचि हवे रुचि बे बंधन दयाल नीताय चैतन्य बोले नचने अमर मान
Nachre amar man, nachre amar man, dayal nitai chaitanya bole, nachre amar man.
Krishna name anurag, anurag to hobe hai, anurag to hobe hai, anayase. It sapal habe jive rajivan anayase sapal habe jive rajama krishna rati bina jivan to miche hai jivan to miche hai vrinda shesh vrindavane radhe shame pave radashan vrindavane radha shame pave radashan Dayali Sai Chaitanya Bole Nache Amar Man. Dayali Sai Chaitanya Bole Nache Amar Man. Nache Amar Man. Nache Amar Man. Nache Amar Man. Dayali Sai Chaitanya
Hari
Bol.
Hari Bol.
Hari Hari.
Thank you, Shyama Gopi.
Shyamgauri Mataji ki jai, Priti Lakshmi Mataji ki jai.
But now Mataji, I thought I know this bhajan, but it's so hard.
But it was a wonderful attempt, Mataji. Wonderful impromptu singing by all of you. Made it so blessed. Thank you, all of you. Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you so much, Pritulaji Mataji, and Shyamgauri Mataji, and Komadiki Mataji.
Thank you
so much for the bhajan.
So, this song is very favorite to H.S. Radhanath Maharaj. That's why I know.
So, Vaisheshika Prabhu, he does every time in the...
Yes, Sadhu Sangha also.
ISP.
Okay. So anybody having any more questions or comments for Mataji?
One comment.
Yes, Mataji.
Mataji, Priti Vilasi Mataji, please give more classes. Hare Krishna.
Your blessings, Mataji.
Yes, Lord. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you,
Mataji. So, if there are no more questions or comments for Mataji, we can end the call here. Thank you so much, Mataji, for giving your time and association this morning. We are grateful to you and look forward to your more sessions, Mataji. Mancha Kalpata Rupyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyevacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha. Anand Koti Vaishnav Brand Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai, Grandra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Her Grace Preeti Vilasini Mataji Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Mataji, your assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.